I go to refuge to run in light. To the moons, the dharma, and the assembly of saints. The virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections.
May I attain the state of the Buddha to benefit all sentient beings.
I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha's Dharma and the assembly of saints, from the richest merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections.
May I attain the state of the Buddha to benefit all sentient beings.
May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness.
May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering.
May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless.
May all wealth and equanimity be free from aversion and
clinging. The ground is covered with flowers, sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this, offering it as the Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's realm. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariwara Ratnamandava Bodhameva Samudra Saparanaya Mariya. Okay, welcome. So before we go on in our text, let's take a moment just to review how far and where we've come to this point. So the name of our text is
The Beautiful Ornament of the Three Visions.
Okay. And what lineage is it?
Sakya.
Sakya? Specifically?
Nyingma.
Sakyalamdre.
Oh, yes.
Sakyalamdre. And in English, what would that be?
The path together with its fruit.
Yeah, okay.
The path is ever stopped.
Yeah, it has different translations, but that's one of them.
The Lamdre is a lineage?
Well, the Sakya is the school. And this is the Lamdre lineage, which is...
I thought Sakya was the lineage.
Well, you can use different words, but usually we say schools, but you could say lineage. Okay, and so we have the esoteric and the exoteric. Obviously, this is the exoteric. And the great Sakya masters, in their kindness, made it really easy for us by boiling it down into two parts. Do you remember what that might be? The preliminaries and the practice. So the preliminaries and the practice. Preliminaries is two parts.
Renunciation.
Faith and
refuge.
Faith and refuge are the preliminaries. Okay. Then we went into the actual practice. And so the actual practice has three visions. Okay, the three visions. Right. The vision of the impure vision.
Vision of experience.
Vision of experience.
Pure vision.
A pure vision. Okay. So we do the impure vision in order to produce
renunciation.
Vision of experience to produce
compassion.
Aspiration. And the pure vision to produce enthusiasm, yeah. Okay, so now we're into the impure vision to produce renunciation. And there's three parts to that. there's the faults of the worldly existence, the difficulty of the prerequisite, which is the famous precious human rebirth, the instructions on what is virtuous and what is non-virtuous. We're in the instructions on the faults of worldly existence to produce renunciation. And we went through the three lower realms, which are
Hell realm,
hungry ghost,
and the animal.
Animal, okay. So we finished up last time with the animal realm, right?
In the middle of the ocean somewhere, I think.
Yeah. So there's, just to review that quickly, there's different kinds of sort of sub-realms or realms in the animal realm, and we don't see a lot of the animals. We have the animals in our world that we see and run into, and animals also includes insects and worms and things like that, okay? And we have certain contact, obviously, but there's a whole two other realms that we don't even have contact with, so the animal realm is way bigger than even what we see. So just before we, finish up with the animal realm here, I just wanted to make a comment. We've talked, I think, every session about doing the actual practice. It's not enough to just have the nice medicine on the shelf, but you have to actually take it. And we've talked about possibility of using this text as a practice manual. What did we say about that? The three...
Listening, analyzing, and meditating.
Yeah, okay, so there's a three-step process we can do if we want to use this text, and the text is set up for that. Mm-hmm. It gives us the listening part or the teaching part, and then gives us a suggestion every so often after every section about how to actually go into analytical meditation and then go into analysis and then go into analytical meditation. And that's all well and good. You know, with the animal realm, there are some very easy practices that we can do. For example, if you see an animal, a dog or a bird or a worm or anything, you can just say Om Mani Padme Hum three times or the Medicine Buddha mantra three times. That's really easy. Does anybody know the karmic result if we do that? What's the result for that animal if we do those mantras?
Well,
then you blow it on the animal.
Then they can possibly attain human form in their next life.
Yes. But what's guaranteed absolutely, according to the Buddha?
Well, they won't fall into any lower realms.
Exactly. They will never, ever again be born in the lower realms. Mm-hmm. And if you're born in the animal realm, that's a tough place to be because you really don't have a chance to practice.
Yeah.
And so what we can do is we can protect them by saying these mantras and shut the door on the lower realms. That's really something. And it's so easy to do. So when you're walking, if you see a doggy, and maybe the doggy has a mommy or a daddy on the other end of the leash, they get the benefit too, because there's no guarantee if you have the human rebirth that you're necessarily going to go forward. You can also go back.
Does the dog have to hear it?
They don't have to hear it, but we say the mantra usually three times and then just very gently blow it. Depending on how strong your spiritual practice is, I guess. I don't know how far your distance goes, but it's just an easy practice to do. And we don't have to wait until we're enlightened to help other beings. So I just wanted to make that comment before we shut the door on the animal realm. So if you're following in the text, we're on page 38, and we have finished the suffering of suffering, and now we're going to read about the suffering of change. Would somebody like to read that section for us?
I will.
Okay.
One might think, well, it's true that one will have suffering if born in these three realms of misery. One will have happiness if born in the three higher realms. However, this is not the case. As it was said in
Okay, that's, I've done the English for some of these. So that's the huge gathering of discourses in English. That's the name of it, sutra.
All objects of desire are impermanent and unsteady, inconstant, changing, like a dream, like a mirage, like a city of illusion, and like lightning and bubbles. Thus, all these defiled pleasures are only apparent happiness, since they are impermanent, unsteady, changing, passing away, and surely deceptive. To reflect on this, A. Consider the general suffering of change. B. Particularly, consider the suffering of human change. And C. Consider the suffering of the gods and demigods' changes.
Thank you. So we've just gone through the lower realms, which are awful, but it is possible to think, well, you know, I have a human rebirth, and then there's also the gods, and gee, you know, that wouldn't be too bad, be a god, they have it pretty good. It's possible to think that way and not really grow your renunciation. So we're going to find out now why that's not a good idea to think that way. Would somebody else like to continue?
Sure.
Go ahead.
The general suffering of change. Though one be born as Sakra, the Lord of Gods, since this state is impermanent, again one can fall to the earth. Though one becomes the universal monarch, since this state is uncertain, one can be born again as a servant. Though one be born as the great Brahma, since this state is unreliable, one can be reborn into the unceasing hell. Even if one is born as the son of the gods, the sun or the moon, this is of no benefit, since again one can enter the darkness in between the continents. Thus it is not right to be confident about whatever happiness of the higher realms one must attain.
Okay, thank you. So Sakra is another name for Indra, in case you're wondering. And then a universal monarch. Does anybody know what a universal monarch is?
Chakravartin.
Chakravartin, yeah, but what is that? This is a term we hear all the time, but it's a rebirth, a very fortunate rebirth where you are a monarch, but over not just a nation or even a continent, but whole world systems. It's a very sort of auspicious rebirth, and you have the power to promote Dharma as well. You're not only a ruler in the worldly part of things, but also in the spiritual part of things. But even that rebirth is not necessarily guaranteed that you'll go on from there. It's possible to fall back even from that kind of high rebirth. And the spiritual source for that is not listed here, but it's actually Abhidharma teachings. And then Brahma is, the great Brahma is king of the form realm. We talked about the form realm. That was that last time or a couple times ago. You have the form realm, the formless realm, desire realm. So he's the top of that realm, but can fall back. The point being, no matter, even if you get really, really, really high in the samsaric hierarchy, universal monarch is the highest, by the way, it's still no guarantee. You can still fall back. So there's a spiritual reference here from Letter to a Friend. Can somebody read that for us? Having become Sakra?
I can continue.
Okay.
Having become Sakra, worthy of the world's worship, once again one falls to earth due to the power of previous deeds. Even though one becomes the universal monarch himself, once again one becomes a servant of a servant in the world of existence. Though one attains the great bliss of desire in the gods' realm, and the dispassionate bliss of Brahma himself, again one becomes the fuel of unceasing hell's fire, and has to undergo unceasing torment. Having illuminated the whole world with the light of one's own body, through having attained the state of being, the sun or moon, again having gone to the murky black darkness, one does not see even one's own outstretched hand.
Okay, thank you. So there's a reference there where it says the dispassionate bliss of Brahma himself. Brahma being the king of the form realm, he's not in the desire realm, so they're free of desire in that realm. So you might say, well, human realm, and you know, we've got a lot of desires, but it'd be really great to be free of desire. But even being free of desire is not enough. So that's what that reference is there, where it says dispassionate bliss. Going on, it says also, as Jetson Rinpoche, Dr. Gyaltsen said in a song, we talked about songs one time. Do you remember what we said about songs? Did he just sit down and write a song?
It's like teaching for those who do, like Milarepa songs were
another way of teaching.
Or teaching in a way that the people could relate to.
Okay. And where did it come from?
The realizations of...
Yeah, the songs of experience. The experience of the practitioner who actually had the experience is inspired to just spontaneously sing. And some of these songs have been written down, so here we have one here from Ndrapa Gyaltsen. Would somebody like to read that?
Naga, when contemplating the suffering of change, there is seen Chakra turning into an ordinary being. A universal monarch turns into a slave, and the sun and the moon going to darkness. The belief in this depends upon the word of the Buddha. As ordinary people do not have the ability to realize it, look by your own sight at the changes of men.
Suffering of change is pretty easy to see. That's a sort of general overview of the suffering, the general suffering of change. Now we're going to talk about the suffering of human change. You want to keep reading there, Stephen?
Sure. In particular, reflect upon the suffering of human beings. As it was said in the...
That's Supreme, Letter to a Friend by Nagarjuna.
Be saddened at worldly existence, which is the source of many sufferings, such as destitution, of what is desired, death, illness, old age, and the like, and also listen to some of its faults. There are no certainties at all in worldly existence, since fathers become sons, mothers become wives, and enemies become friends. Likewise, it can happen conversely.
Okay, so thank you. Going back to the 1, 2, 3, 4th line, it says, listen to some of its faults. Where do we listen?
Your own life.
Yeah, and also... Dharma teachings. Listening, contemplation, meditation. Yeah. Okay, so there are references to these three steps throughout the text. I'm just pointing them out as we go. And then another song from Dapa Gyaltsen says, wealthy men become poor, the mighty become weak, many people are replaced by one, and so on, exceeding the imagination. If one examines the condition of our own human realm, one sees many people are replaced by one person, the strong grow weak, the wealthy become poor, the foes become friends, kinsmen become foes, and so on. If one examines through detailed contemplation one's own kinsmen, neighbors, and countrymen, none are found to be in their former state because they have not gone beyond the suffering of change. Gone Beyond is one of the names of the Buddha, Gone Beyond. Right? Not only that, but they are constantly afflicted and powerlessly borne away by the four great rivers of birth, old age, disease, and death. Birth is the suffering of the narrow womb, old age is the suffering of the destruction of youth, disease is the suffering of the destruction of health, and death is the suffering of destruction of life. When I read this, I'm reminded of an experience I had when I lived in Italy. I just happened to know a couple of people in Italy that were not rich. They were extremely rich. I mean, really rich. And they both committed suicide. Wow. So even that money wasn't enough to save them. So now we're going to go into a little more detail of these four famous sufferings. Does somebody want to read about the suffering of birth?
Sure. The suffering of birth. Since birth is the root of all other sufferings, as well as the result of the origination of suffering, its own nature does not go beyond suffering. Furthermore, as far as womb birth is concerned, there's suffering of suffocation by bad odors when residing in the womb, the suffering like being pressed down upon when the mother eats food, the suffering like falling into a ravine when she moves about and sits, and the suffering of being affected by heat and cold when she eats and drinks hot and cold food. During birth, there is the suffering like being drawn through a hole, and on being born, there is the suffering like falling into a pit of thorns. Therefore, as it was said in the...
Yeah, that's Nagarjuna's letter for training.
Mm-hmm. Having entered into the hell-like womb, choking on an overabundance of very terrible bad smells, and residing in the gloomy darkness of a very narrow place, so the body in the womb must experience the suffering of being cramped.
Okay, just one note here when they say womb birth, because in the Buddhist teachings, there's other kinds of birth, too. There's spontaneous birth. There's birth from moisture. And is there another one?
Egg
birth, right. Okay, so that's just a reference to womb birth as an example. So that's number one. And now we go into old age. Would somebody like to read old age?
Old age turns a beautiful form ugly. Old age vitiates strength and brilliance. Old age snatches one's radiance. Old age causes death. And old age snatches happiness and produces sorrow. On the body turning ugly, it says, changing from what one was before, one becomes bent and crooked. One's hair turns white or becomes bald, and so on. Concerning one's waning strength, it notes, due to the decline of one's body power, one cannot do any difficult work at all. One must lean on others, even in rising and sitting. One's voice loses its resonance due to the vitiation of one's vocal power. And one's speech is indistinct and falters due to the decline of one's mental powers. One has no enthusiasm for any work whatsoever, and one immediately forgets everything that was said or done, and one commits mistakes and errors in all activity. Brilliance also disappears. Until now, others praised and honored one. But having changed, one becomes an object of ridicule, even by children. One's own sons scorn one, and one's good fortune decreases. The body does not experience warmth, and the mouth does not experience delicious taste. One's speech is not taken to be true, and one comes to the point of mentally praying for death. The snatching of one's radiance occurs as follows. losing the former luster of one's body, one becomes bluish, whitish, and the like. The mouth and the nose droop and become pale. The causing of death. While one is pressed by old age, which is the chief fatal illness that leads to death, all other diseases are brought about. One cannot digest the food that is eaten. Gasping for breath, one wheezes. Due to the growing old of all conditioned things, one dies, even though one has no other disease. Such is the nature of that long life which worldlings think represents happiness and which is made into an object of their prayers.
Well, that's pretty self-evident, I guess.
Well, the birthing thing, I mean, we don't remember any of that stuff. Like,
well, we do in dreams.
So
sometimes.
How do we know we're suffering in the womb? I didn't know you could smell in the womb either. I thought everything was plugged up with mucus and crap.
Well, babies can recognize when they come out of the womb the sound of their mother's voice.
So they can hear, but
you
I'm wondering
hear.
About the smell.
And,
they're all their passageways are mucused up.
Well, imagine if Mummy had a really strong curry. It would affect baby.
I don't know. I don't know. But we don't remember that stuff in the womb. How do we know we're suffering?
I've had dreams of being stuck in the womb and having it really hard to kind of go through.
Yeah, I had a dream like that too, so I'm not sure we don't remember. We might not consciously remember, but unconsciously, I don't know. Who
There's
knows?
Different kinds of memories too.
Yeah.
That's right.
I remember being like 4 and looking at my newborn brother, and in dependence upon watching him recognize features of someone's face and grasp at them, I remembered having done the same thing myself, whereas I would not have remembered it before if I hadn't seen him do it. So it ignited a memory that was not a normal visual or sensory memory. So I just know that there are different kinds. You can access in different ways.
Okay, so that was number 2, and if that wasn't enough, we have number 3, suffering of disease. Who would like to read about that?
I'll read it.
Okay.
The suffering of disease. Illness is easy to understand, since it is already apparent to everyone who suffers. Still, one should produce revulsion from worldly existence by examining the condition of one's own and others' illness. Common to all illness is the suffering of intolerable pain, of having to bear rough medical treatment, having to take bitter medicine, of being forbidden to take desired food and drinks, having to use what is not desired, of not being able to digest whatever is eaten, of not being able to pass the night if one gets through the day, of not being able to pass the day if one survives the night, of apprehension of not recovering, of apprehension of death, of apprehension that one's wealth will be exhausted, of apprehension that one will be forsaken by one's doctor and nurses and so on. Thus one suffers endlessly, as it is said in the...
That's the letter for training by Nagarjuna.
Distressed by being stricken with many hundreds of diseases, these living beings are like human hungry ghosts.
Okay.
The suffering of death, as it is said in the Bodhicarya Bhattara.
Yeah, Shantideva.
Not having yet begun this work, having begun one, and only half finishing another, suddenly the Lord of Death comes and you think, ah, alas, I am destroyed. Their eyes reddened and swollen through the power of grief and with tears falling from their faces. Your relatives lose hope and you look upon the face of death's messenger, afflicted by the remembrance of your own sins and full of fear upon hearing the sounds of hell. Your body is smeared with excrement and you become maddened. Then what will you do? Thus far, one has only been making arrangements to remain a long time in this life and has had no thought in mind that death will come. One is then seized by a fierce fatal illness. Rituals and other preventatives do not benefit, and medicines and treatment do not succeed. One knows one will die but cannot bear the thought of death. One does not find any beneficial means. Frightened by the messenger of death, one remembers one's own sins, is afflicted or distressed by the pangs of disease, lies on one's last bed, surrounded for the last time by one's kinsmen, speaks one's last words, is fed one's last spoonful of sips one's last drop of thirsted for water, is powerless to stay on in the house one has built, is powerless to carry all the wealth and prosperity one has collected, and is powerless to consort with the kinsmen one has nourished. Not knowing where one will go next, all of one's work is left unfinished. One must go alone to some unknown empty region. Hence, one has these inexpressible sufferings.
Okay, thank you. So I'll just make a comment that we've made before, which is Nochen Kunshu Lundup couldn't put everything in this text, and so there are frequent references to outside texts and so on, and I'll just comment that there are many, many Buddhist practices around death that one can receive the teachings and practice those practices. So I just mention that as a side comment. You want to continue reading there?
There is no one who is not thus afflicted by change and by the four great rivers of birth, old age, disease, and death. And it was said in a sutra, disease approaches, destroying health. Old age approaches, destroying youth. Deterioration approaches, destroying good fortune. And death approaches, destroying life.
Okay, thank you. Would somebody like to continue?
Furthermore, consider the suffering of not being able to guard one's possessions. If one has wealth, in order to guard it, one has neither leisure by day nor sleep by night. Even though one spends one's money, one has to become the servant of others. One looks upon all others as enemies. Officials and one's relatives are considered the most vicious of all, because they take away one's wealth, whether by force or clandestinely. One even loses one's life for the sake of wealth, so one suffers endlessly. Consider also the suffering of not obtaining sought-after wealth by those lacking it. The poor one does not find breakfast in the morning, nor dinner at night. The stars are one's hat, and the frost one's shoes. One rides the horse of one's own calves and is hit by whips. One offers the flesh of one's calves to the dogs and one's face to men. Though one begs and seeks in various manners, by day one finds nothing to eat, even though one searches, and by night finds nothing to wear. Even if one acquires a little through great hardship, one does not get to enjoy it, for one loses it by taxation or by transport service requisitions from officials. Not only that, but there is the suffering of meeting a hated foe, or the apprehension of meeting him. There is the suffering of parting with loved ones, and the apprehension of parting from them. There is the suffering of not obtaining the result of one's hopes. The rich suffer mentally and the poor physically. There is the suffering of the difficulty of protecting one's gross mind. The suffering of being discarded by loved ones if one compromises with a foe, and the suffering of hatred from enemies if one is in harmony with a loved one. Thus there are indescribable sufferings. In brief, all of the various types of suffering of the six realms of beings, heat and cold, hunger and thirst, weariness and fatigue, fighting and quarrels, changing and the like, are established through the experience of this world's suffering.
Thank you. I knew of a situation recently where somebody was very near death, But they had an antique car that they were really attached to. And they were really kind of going, oh, well, my car, who's going to take care of my car? And fortunately, a Buddhist person went, a relative, and went and said, well, you know, your nephew Joey, he really likes cars. I bet he would love that car, and I bet he would take a really good care of it. And this poor person, you can imagine, you know, they were probably confused too, and they went, oh, right, Joey. And so they signed the papers for the car over to Joey, and the person died very shortly after that. Oh. They were grasping.
The
yeah, and that's just an example. I mean, we can probably all tell stories like that, you know, mm-hmm. that at the very end there's that thing that maybe you didn't even know you were attached to so much, mm-hmm. you know. Okay, so that ends that section. The suffering of gods and demigods change. Who would like to read this?
Okay, the suffering of gods and demigods change. Even though born as a demigod, there is no opportunity for happiness. As it was said, in the
letter to a friend, Nagarjuna.
Since the demigods naturally have hatred for the splendors of the gods, they have great mental suffering. Though endowed with intelligence, the truth is not seen due to the veil of their afflictions. Through the power of a demigod's natural jealousy of the god's splendor. One is constantly wielding weapons and armor only to fight, quarrel, and start a battle with the gods. In this way, one does not have even a moment of mental or physical leisure. Though one acts in this manner, since the power of one's merit is not equal to that of the gods, one is always defeated in battle. One dwells with the suffering of one's body being cleft and ripped, and even one's mind sinks into grief. Finally, having died as a result of such non-virtuous conduct, motivated by hatred and jealousy, one suffers the need of being born in the lower realms.
So these poor demigods, they really have it rough because they live just below the gods. We talked about the gods a little bit. These are worldly gods, by the way. They're still in samsara. But they have a pretty godly life, the gods. Whatever they wish for, they get right away. They have these beautiful bodies. They have cosmic sex. They just party all the time, and it just looks really good. If you're in the demigod realm and you look up, you're jealous. And they get really annoyed, and so they attack the gods, and they fight. And as it says, they don't have the merit to win the battles, and they always lose. They always lose. And not only that, they get wounded. They die. The demigods that are left behind, like their families, suffer because their loved ones are in battle and losing and being injured and dying. And it's just this constant frustration and jealousy and anger. And as a result, they create this incredible bad karma. Mm-hmm. So when that karma expires, they almost always go down. And so it's really an awful, awful place to be. It's just constantly suffering. So that's the demigods. And so one might think, well, then maybe the gods have it. You know, maybe that's a good place to go, but we're going to find out now.
So a key feature of a demigod is jealousy?
Jealousy and anger and resentment and that kind of... Okay, so who wants to read now?
Are we on?
Okay, we're on page 45, when the five signs of death...
And five signs of approaching death appear.
Okay.
The gods of the realm of desire experience mental suffering that is even greater than the physical suffering of hell beings.
Okay. So the five signs will be described in the next page. So if you're wondering what they are, we're going to get to that soon. And the important part here is the gods suffer even greater than the hell beings. And the letter to a friend is going to explain that. And Lama Jampa said that it's 16 times greater than the hell beings. And we're going to find out why here. Okay.
Even in the higher realms, the suffering of transmigration experienced by those endowed with great happiness is greater than that of hell's. Having thought thus, the good should not thirst after higher realms, which come to an end. The five signs of death are described in this sutra.
Letter to a friend.
Letter to a friend. The complexion of the body turns ugly. They do not like their seats, and their flower garlands grow old. Their garments become soiled, and on their bodies appear a sweat that was not there before. There are the five signs which indicate death in higher realms. The five signs of death's approach are enumerated in the...
Yeah, this is a Mahayana sutra that I couldn't find the translation for. Does anybody know the English for that? Anyway, we can just keep going.
In this sutra, the body's light grows dim. When they bathe, particles of water stick to the body. Garments and ornaments emit unpleasant sounds. Their eyelashes blink, and they become attached to one place, even though they are of a moving nature.
Yeah. So these unpleasant sounds, the God realm is a really social place. They have this great life, and they're all beautiful, and they smell really nice, and anything that they want that just appears. But when the karma of a god starts to end, and there's these signs that it's ending, they start getting this really awful smell. And because the gods are really sensitive, they just basically run away from this other god and they exclude them. And so there's this intense isolation experience. And these unpleasant sounds are the other gods saying, you're going to die soon, or you're going to hell. Because they have this kind of limited clairvoyance, I suppose. And there's this incredible mental suffering where they have this awful smell, their skin changes, their eyes change, and they go through this deterioration before they actually die. These are the signs.
If such signs arise, one is abandoned by kinsmen and close friends who merely throw a single flower toward one from a distance and are unable to come near. At that time, knowing that one will soon die, one surveys the three places. Due to having formerly carelessly enjoyed intense attachment to objects of desire, one realizes that one will be reborn in the lower states. So one begins to roll hither and thither, suffering like a fish cast onto hot sand. And then one dies and is reborn in the lower realms. There, too, one must experience various sufferings, as it was said.
Okay, this is the Sutra Contemplating Mindfulness, which is another Mahayana sutra.
As it was said, however much suffering occurs at the time of a god's death, that of beings in unceasing hell is not even a 16th part of that. Alas, O chariot and groves! Alas, O lands and rivers! Alas, O beloved gods! Thus lamenting, downward they fall.
So it's not a place to aspire to. So don't be arrogant and proud. Because that's how you get there. Okay. Does somebody else want to continue reading?
Sure, I will. Even though a god of the realm of form, or of the formless realm, does not manifest such sufferings, just as birds flying in the sky must swiftly alight on the ground, so upon the exhaustion of thrust of pure virtue, one descends lower and lower, due to one's mind being deceived by one's wrong views. Having fallen down into lower states and been born there, one must experience terrible sufferings. If one has no merit when transmigrating from the gods' realms, one helplessly becomes a dweller in any of the realms of animals, hungry ghosts, and hells.
Okay, thank you. So this might not be obvious, so I'm just going to explain this a little bit. This paragraph is actually referring to a different kind of god than what we just read, the gods that are fighting the demigods. So we have different... Samsara is a big place. So there's lots of different realms, and there's also different types of god realms. And so what we just read about, gods and the demigods, that's all in the desire realm. But there's also the form realm and the formless realm. And those beings that take birth there are also called gods. But they're not desire realm gods, they're form realm or formless realm gods. The form realm gods have bodies and wear clothes. The formless realm gods obviously don't have any form. And you end up there by having very deep meditation experiences, but doing it erroneously. Even though they have this godlike existence, it's still samsara. You still don't want to go there, and the karma eventually expires after a long, long, long time. You're not practicing when you're in there, so you have no choice really but to fall. So even those gods in that place, those two places, as it says, descend lower and lower because you've had wrong views. And that's scripturally referenced by a letter to a friend. So let's just keep reading. You want to keep going?
It may be asked, for what reasons are the gods of these upper realms, who are said to dwell in the peaceful life of meditation, again reborn in the lower states? The gods of the upper realms think these meditations to be liberation and the path to liberation. Though they dwell there for a long while, at some time the force of that meditation is exhausted, and, arising from it, they produce the wrong view that though I have single-pointedly performed only meditation for so many years, if still I am not able to pass beyond the three realms, then that which is proclaimed as liberation from the world is a lie. By that thought, one destroys all of one's roots of virtue and is born into the lower realms.
Okay, thank you. You can see they've made this mistake where they've gotten really high with their meditation, like really, and they think, well, I made it. And then they discover eventually, oh, I'm not enlightened. And they go, well, I got ripped off, you know. And then what kind of karma does that create when you renounce Dharma at that point in your path? Renouncing Dharma is one of the worst acts you can do. And so automatically,
kaboom,
they fall. And this next quotation is from the Answer and Praise Sutra. Linda, do you want to keep going?
Those blinded by ignorance who are against the doctrine, having gone to the summit of existence, are again immersed in the sufferings of worldly existence. Also, as it was said in the
letter to a friend,
all the fully ripened results are terrible, even for a person who practices well, if he still entertains wrong views.
Yeah, so wrong views, Remember the three poisons? We talked about the three poisons. What are the three poisons?
Ignorance,
attachment,
aversion, and hatred.
Okay, so attachment, desire,
anger,
and the third one is?
Wrong view.
Yeah, ignorance, which includes wrong views. So here, there's a reference to wrong views. And of those three poisons, ignorance is considered really the worst because everything, if you've got it wrong, then you do it wrong. And this is an example of some beings who, even though they went really high, then they had wrong views and that sent them down.
But if also what I'm getting from it is that all they did was meditate, which isn't, you know, they're sort of more rounded, like they weren't continuing to practice, do a full practice.
We don't know, really, but you could do practice and get to a high level of meditation and then do that wrong. That's why it's really important to have a guru. Somebody that really knows how to guide you, because there's a lot of ditches you can drive your car into on this highway.
but the problem, it seems, that base, which is implied, is intent. What is the intent of the meditation? With wrong motivation, no matter how high you get, you will not achieve a result, because the path is the result.
Yeah. Geshe Tashi Namgyal made that point to me one time very clearly when he said that there was a monk who was really good at tantric meditation, and he was really into the wisdom side of it, and he got really very advanced, but he forgot the compassion side of it, and he was reborn as a rat.
Yeah.
So in other words, you got to do... It's looking at a more balanced practice, right?
Well, what
just
they
focusing on one thing, but
the classic example is the bird needs two wings,
mm-hmm.
wisdom, compassion.
Who are you doing this for? That's the question, right? Mm-hmm. What do you do this for? Mm-hmm. The helping of all beings or yourself?
And not only that, but even if you're doing it for all beings, then you get too much in the wisdom side of
yes.
it.
You might forget the compassion and be really mean to somebody.
Yeah, and just say, oh, well, it's emptiness. Okay, so where are we here?
As it was said.
As it was said in, those blinded by ignorance who are against the doctrine, having gone to the summit of existence, are again immersed in the sufferings of worldly existence. Also, as it was said in, all the fully ripened results are terrible, even for a person who practices well, if he still entertains wrong views. To reflect in the meaning of this one, one should think in detail. Alas, my hope that the higher realm is endowed with happiness is a delusion brought about by not examining and not analyzing. Although it appears to be a minor happiness, it is insubstantial. A bubble-like object, changing every moment, definitely not beyond the stage of dissection.
Excuse me for interrupting you there, Linda, but I just want to point out that here we have another example about analyzing, and we're being given the outline of how to use the text as a meditation manual, and we're being really kind of spoon-fed. You can analyze this and then meditate about this.
Right. Okay. I'll start that sentence again. Although it appears to be a minor happiness, it is insubstantial. A bubble-like object, changing every moment, definitely not beyond the stage of deception. Having become attached to the temporary appearance of happiness, I am more insane than the insane to practice acceptance and rejection regarding illusions while toiling greatly to obtain that appearance of happiness. The conditions proclaimed to be foremost among all the good fortunes of the higher realms for Brahma and Indra, the universal monarch, the sun and the moon are such as explained above. For human beings, even those considered to have the greatest wealth are still possessed by the conditions of birth, old age, disease, death, destitution, unexpected meetings, partings, and hopelessness, and for the demigods and the gods of the desire, form, and formless realms, there are such conditions. Alas, who that is wise would still be attached to the appearance of worldly happiness? Therefore, the world of the higher realms resembles the island of cannibals. Whoever desires and is attached to it destroys everyone. Like a bird in a burning forest or a swan on a frozen lake, reach the decision to diligently leave worldly existence. Then think, now, at any cost, I must practice from my heart the holy religion which surely liberates one from worldly existence.
Thank you. So there you have a big chunk of analytical, the contemplation part of the three-step process. And then the very last paragraph is sort of a summary, sort of a concise meditative object that you could use as your analytical meditation object, those last two lines. So just repeating again, that's been set out for us in the text. So that's the end of that kind of suffering. We now have the suffering of conditional phenomena, which is a fairly long topic. How are we doing here in the group? Do we want to go on to the next topic, or is that enough contemplation for one session? How are you feeling?
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of enough.
It's enough? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay.
I would like to share something, if I may. One of my older colleagues, my mentor and senior when I first arrived at the University of Victoria, is in hospital. And I went to see him. He used to be a big man, heavy set, always with a smile. His body is very slight now. He couldn't weigh more than 100 pounds. And he's lying there in a state of bliss. I said to him, "How do you feel?" "Well," he said, "it's the end of life. And you know, I had become so tired. Oh, that townhouse. All those stairs. And here, they feed me. They're so kind. They're so gentle. They bathe me. I have a beautiful view. And I'm thinking, all those students with their shining faces, I still see them. And my sons, as babies, I still hold them, but only in my heart. Because I'm about to be free, Linda. I'm about to be free."
Lucky man. Mm-hmm.
I think that we die as we lived. Mm-hmm. He was one of the gentlest, kindest, most wonderful teachers. He would pick up a student, dust them off, help them stand on their feet, and help them fly. Mm. And he never once was arrogant or difficult or argumentative. He never saw himself as a god among men, as so many do in academia. He was simply a light. That's John Critch.
Oh, really?
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way to end this evening before we do our dedication. Yeah.
The attitude I want to have.
Karen?
Sonam Dev Tanjari Vani Tonani Vedanam Bhaji Ke Ganam Chivam Dupayi Lepet Sogle Drovan Jangchu Sempo Ma ke panam ke guji, song bo de yong de jing de de da gung gi ye zu da lo tu ye wa de da tam je ra du mo du so je bi ga wa tam je gi no la gang la cho tu nga pa gi da jin ge we sa we di kun kyong sang po chu ni ra tu ngo war gi chak sa wa dang chu jin sha pa dang ge su yi rang gu jin Tam che zo pe jang chu chi.
By this merit, may all attain omniscience.
May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish.
In whatever way,
Bali Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues that I might train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise the Supreme, praise Buddhas of the past, present, and future. I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little merit from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment.